What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I am Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, and I'm joined by my recent fellow visitor in Las Vegas, Jason Anthony at Booms62. Jason, how do you feel? Are you recovered? Are you ready for the season?
I don't think you recover from that great weekend that quickly, Vlad, but I am ready for some baseball. One more sleep, like I've seen online, and then we will have some baseball tomorrow. I'm excited.
Yeah, we just all got back from Las Vegas, and just an absolute whirlwind. So incredibly fun. Just, you know, an amazing opportunity to catch up with old friends, meet some new ones, which is great, and just a reminder of what a phenomenal community we have. You know, all the back and forth you might see sometimes on Twitter. It's all, you know, just fun and games. You know, a little ego, a little competition. But when it comes down to it, everyone's just so incredibly friendly. And then, of course, the guys there at NFBC just do a phenomenal job of putting everything together. Just phenomenal event. Greg Ambrosius, Tom Kesenick, and Jeff Stein. So it was really nice to see. Any impressions about the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it is funny. There is absolutely no beefs once we're in person in Vegas. Everybody wants to get along and hug. I got a nice chuckle out of that. But just some of my favorite people in the world going out there, hanging out. It's 4 days, but it feels like it's 6 hours. Just it goes so fast. I do want to give a shout out to Greg Ambrosius. When he did the main event speech on Saturday morning, you can tell how much this year has been hard on him with the scandal, amongst other things. It's year after year. It's a challenge for these guys to keep running this program or this business that we all love so much. And, you know, he does such a great job of it. It's such a great website, such a great community. And, you know, we just appreciate all the work Greg does. And, you know, my heart went out to him, and I'm just glad to be a part of it.
And so here we are with, by the time you hear this, games might already be underway. Draft season is almost over, and that's another sad thing is we've just been at it for all these months. For some people, draft season has been just this little window over the last week or so, but we've been doing this for so long, and to me, that's just in many ways it's a huge, you know, the most fun of everything, the roster construction, the builds, keeping up with all the helium and all the crazy things that happen over the course of the season, deciding whether to react to these things, not to react. So how are you as you pretty much wrap up your draft season? Are you content as far as players that you got, fighting for players in the market, that sort of thing?
I don't think you're ever 100% content with the players you got. It's just not possible to get all your guys. I was really happy with my Vegas drafts. I really came home pleased. My brain, when I flew home Sunday morning, I could not have done another draft for 2 days. So I don't know how the guys that are there for 5-6 days continue to draft. It is so difficult to stay locked in. I have one more main tonight. I'm excited about that. But overall, the draft season's great. It's that moving puzzle that is like a drug. Drafting, getting live on the clock, whether it's a slow draft or 1 minute pick, when you're on the clock, there is, it's just this unique feeling that I think anybody listening to this can relate to me, that it is just a drug, that this sense of energy that comes through you.
And of course, we had a lot of the FTN team there as well. They were there drafting Mike Mager and Todd Whitestone and Jake Kuchek, who was there for the first time in Vegas, and yourself and me had the FTN happy hour on that Saturday. Or Friday, actually, it was. And obviously, that was a lot of fun. And again, just, you know, so cool to meet new people. And just, it's never enough time. You kind of want to be able to spend enough time with everybody. But, you know, maybe one of these years, Junstead will let me stay a little longer than usual.
Doubtful.
Very doubtful. All right. So we today are going to get you ready for the start of the season. We've got some bold predictions that we'd like to run by you, and then as well discuss some of the players that we feel like we're missing out on, players that we have limited shares of, players that we are light exposure on, pretty much by design. So we'll go over that. And just a few quick housekeeping notes. We are pivoting FTN from obviously all the preseason content to all the in-season stuff For example, if you haven't already seen it, our guy Rob Orr at Not The Bobby Orr, he is managing our bullpens, relievers, and closers. He's got a weekly article that comes out on that. And then that sheet is live, interactive, and meaning that he will be updating it, basically as it goes. So it's they're live updates directly there to the to the document, and not interactive, of course. That doesn't mean you can talk to it. So that was a wrong choice of words there. Other things we have is, of course, my free agent article that comes out every Saturday, usually an update on Sunday. We'll have hitter and pitcher rankings by Lucas Beery and Eric Cross. And then this is the big one. This is the really exciting one. We've got a new feature this year. This will be handled by Mike Mager. And this will be a article that goes hand in hand with the FAB column. So what it is, it's a drops and disasters piece. So the drops part is basically a chart with explanation of who the recommended drops are for 12 and 15 teamers. And then a little section on pitchers perhaps to consider avoiding for the following week. So Mike will be tracking those disasters over the course of the season, see what kind of hit rate we have there. And of course, as we launch with the new website in April, not much will change for you other than better user interface. And and we'll have all our profile pictures up. So no more cartoons. It'll be, sorry, Jason, you just happened to miss us for the era of the end of cartoons.
That was the only reason I signed up, Vlad, was to get a cartoon face of mine. But I think I'll be all right.
Yeah, then we got you a couple pods in. You're like, okay, maybe I'll stay. So new website's launching, and we are working on something that might be fun on the automated front. That's all I'll tell you. Don't want to give away anymore, but that's all I'll say. Something cool and automated, a helpful tool that should be able to help you this fantasy season. So, all right, away we go. Shout out to Dan Strafford for that one. That is his saying. So Dan, if you listen to the pod, I owe you some royalty for that. Relevant news. Let's drop a few players here that are top of mind. Who's the first guy that comes to mind for you?
He's running through my mind, and that's Victor Scott II. He is someone that I was drafting and stashing, or drafting and hoping he would make the team. I know Matt Modica and I were really in on him, and we got him in a couple places in Vegas. Victor Scott, going to be the opening day center fielder. It's kind of a catch 22. He didn't make the team based off necessarily earning it. He made it based on injury. So I think that actually shortens his leash once these guys get healthy, not lengthens it. Now, if he comes and plays immediately and he starts stealing bags and getting on base, he should hold the job because his defense is elite, his speed is elite. I think his hit tool is actually okay, but I think it's definitely, poor man's, or I mean, an easy comp is just a poor man's or even a good man's Esteury Ruiz.
Yeah, so Victor Scott, the one thing to note is the question, I guess, right away is, he has four games to start the week, but of those four, Thursday through Sunday, how many will he play? And then you look at the quality of pitchers that they're going up against for in Dodger Stadium against the likes of Glasnow, Yamamoto, Bobby Miller. And then they're going to go, three in San Diego. They might face Darvish and Musgrove. So there's a bunch of games on the road. When they get back home, they face a pretty stellar Miami Marlins pitching staff, and then the Phillies. So probably, if it lines up for it, probably some Wheeler and Nola. It will be interesting. There are a bunch of lefties in there, I think, that are coming up, and he's a left-handed bat. So I will be curious how much he plays. But I mean, the one issue is, they are so short-staffed on offense right now. The way I'm looking at it, projected opening lineup, I mean, that's how bad it is. It's like Michael Ciani is really the only other guy that they have there, because three of their outfielders, Carlson, Edmund, Nootbaar, are all on IL to start the year, and Nootbaar appears to be on his way back soon. So I'm not poo-pooing the Victor Scott thing. Modica actually had a really funny tweet about how one feels about Victor Scott has to do with whether they have him rostered or not. I've only got Victor Scott in a couple places. They're just draft champions. I did miss the boat this weekend on him in main event. But either way, that doesn't affect my projection. The projection in VDP has him for around 300, 320, I believe, plate appearances, like five home runs, 40 runs, and about 25, 27 steals. So I think that's probably pretty fair. And of course, this is us not knowing whether this will be a brief stint or an extended one, because with 500 plus plate appearances, you're talking about a guy that could steal 50 plus with ease. So we'll see. He could be a guy that's added and dropped all season.
Yeah. I guess the only nice thing, and you pointed out, there's not a lot of competition at the moment for playing center field. The other outfielders on their roster, other than what's Nick Cerini? Is that his name?
Well, Michael Ciani.
Ciani.
If what's his name made the team, Martini, did he?
I don't believe so. Burleson was their other outfielder. So there's not a lot of competition in center field. So he should get a long leash. I don't think Nootbaar can really play center field either. So until Edmund comes back or Carlson comes back, he's kind of got a little leash to run with it and see if he belongs in the major leagues. Never played above double A. He is 23 years old, had a good strikeout rate in the minors, but like you pointed out, he's going up against a pretty good pitching to start off, and the major league pitching is definitely different than double A. So hopefully the bat's not knocked out of his hands.
Next, we've got Jordan Montgomery. He signed a nice little deal there with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and seems to me a staff that really could use him. So what are your thoughts on Jordan Montgomery? It's about time, right? So those that had been waiting, originally drafted in it with an ADP around 150, then he was the last couple weeks of draft season when didn't appear whether he would sign or not, was going around 200, even 225 range. And so obviously that would change today for those still drafting here on this Wednesday, the day that we record. But how do you feel about Montgomery joining the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, he's going to be value where he was going. There was never a reason to think he wasn't going to sign, but starting out late, you know, how many starts is he going to miss? Because he's a volume-based guy. You know, not much to do with fantasy, and I'm all for players getting paid, but it kind of makes me smirk a little bit that Boris got really burnt this off season with his clients and holding them out and trying to get all this money. I'm kind of glad that it didn't work, because it's not good for baseball having these guys unsigned. So let's get guys signed quicker, get guys paid, but I'm kind of happy about that. But yeah, Jordan Montgomery is just a solid pitcher, nothing special, but he's a great number four or five starter to have on your team.
Matt McClain, as of this morning, this Wednesday morning, as we record, has undergone shoulder surgery, and the team hopes he will be back this year. So that's obviously not great news. Cincinnati has already been dealing with a lot of damage on the you know, the depth of that roster. And so, yeah, things are really shaking out. And by the way, I don't know why, I just thought Nick Martini in red, and I forgot he's on the Reds, not the Cardinals. So Martini's actually going to crack the lineup now. And
you
Cincinnati.
Got the right color.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Cincinnati didn't have too many mouths to feed in the infield, huh? Mac McClain with the longest second opinion I've ever heard of. I don't think the second opinion ever came out. They just went to surgery. So really kind of depressing. It was somebody I was in on, is somebody I actually have on my draft champion CLQ team. So I'm going to have to navigate that. I really was excited to watch him this year, but he seems to get injured pretty easily. Had the oblique last year, the oblique in spring training, and then dove for a ground ball, and then shoulder. Shoulder injuries are scary for hitters. So even if he comes back, who knows how good he's going to be and how long it takes him to come back.
And the Reds, they're looking at now, considering Bubba Thompson, you remember that guy, on your roster. Talk about a late round speed guy. Bubba Thompson joins a rather odd bench here, one that we did not expect. Back in a month and a half ago, we were looking at any depth chart, and you'd be looking at, like, you know, Christian Encarnacion on the bench against in a platoon, and now that guy is projected for 550 plus at bats, an everyday bat in the lineup. And you got guys like Bubba Thompson, Stuart Fairchild, and they had to trade for Santiago Espinal from the Blue Jays just to make it happen. So as it stands, that lineup just not as pretty as we thought it would, and maybe hurts a little bit on the wager front too, because I'm guessing the Reds had much better odds in just maybe a month ago for division for futures bets. Last guy here, Jared Jones. What is it that what's there not to like about Pittsburgh possible ace rookie Jared Jones?
Yeah, I mean, he is actually a pretty big prospect for them. I think their number three prospect. I don't think he gave up a run in the spring, throwing 100. You know, again, it's a Pittsburgh pitcher, so it'll kind of temper the expectations. But, you know, their team can be kind of sneaky. I wanted to draft him all draft season. I was just hesitant. You know, they signed Domingo Herman. They signed all these kind of retrade pitchers. I didn't think they were going to give him a chance, but he kind of knocked the door down. So I'm pretty excited about him. What about you?
I'm excited about him from a distance because I didn't land on any Jared Jones. So just the way the cookie crumbled. And even in my latest draft, which was, it was the 12-team online championship, and I was drafting that on Monday, I believe. And when every time, every round around where he might go, there was just a load of good pitchers, like guys that I know that are going to stay up for sure for the whole season. And so I just couldn't ever kind of jump on it, right? There were always like one of my guys or some pitchers that we'll talk about here later in our bold predictions that I was really into. And so figured if there's maybe a discount on them, but and unfortunately this year I'm not really doing a FOMO draft. So this time last year, on the last day of the season, I had this one last draft where I would just get the players that I did not have enough shares of over the course of the year. This year for me, that'll just be a cut line. So I'll grab maybe I'll grab a Jared Jones there. We'll see if that's even a possibility and where his ADP might go. But yeah, I mean, bright future there. And the Pirates are just interesting in general. I just think on the offensive side, they're going to be kind of, they're not even sneaky anymore because a lot of their players there are, you know, huge targets. They're a more fun team. But, you know, before we started the show and I was just kind of putting some notes together, one of the things I wanted to have in there was that the Pittsburgh Pirates were going to be like this season's Arizona Cardinals, where they just kind of sneak up on you and, you know, get into the playoffs and maybe do some damage. And the more I think about it, you know, to say a bold prediction and to have something on a short list here, I got to feel like uber confident about it. And my one issue with that is the pitching staff. Really just me looking at guys like Martin Perez and, Marco Gonzalez, like Pittsburgh would really have to be winning and they'd have to kind of become, guys that need to get somebody at the trade deadline. Because I think just like Mitch Keller is, you know, slightly above average, but very inconsistent. Jared Jones is still a rookie. You've got those other guys there, but like, you know, Herman, Lauer, Gonzalez, like, you know, Bailey Falter, like this isn't a batch, I think, that can get you very far. So I still think there's some work to do that the Pirates have to do with pitching.
Yeah, their offense is definitely in front of their pitching. Now, even Jared Jones and Paul Skeens coming up, you can see that changing pretty quickly. I don't know what's behind those two, but they feel like they're one or two pitchers short. But, you know, that is not a bad comp being this year's Diamondbacks kind of year too early team that, you know, wasn't supposed to do it. But, you know, the young guys just kind of produce because that offense does look like a lot of fun.
All right, let's jump into them. Let's do five bold predictions each, and then we'll go into some of the other things. I'm going to have a bold predictions, my guys, article that comes out. It'll be free. It'll post right before all the games start. So I'll be able to get that out there, but just a few things that are popping off are things that I'm feeling really comfortable with and confident on this year. The first one is Seiya Suzuki. Seiya Suzuki is going to be a top 10 outfielder. It's going to be a monster season. And that's my first bold prediction. I wouldn't say it's even all that bold. I think if you look at, haven't really looked at other systems or rankings, but I would guess he's probably comes in somewhere between 15 to 25 on most rankings. And just by VDP value, this is kind of throughout most of the preseason, he's been popping in somewhere around like 13, 14. And he recently got a bump, or at least, you know, where I think is the potential, the sort of 85th percentile outcome for him. And what I think that is for, say, a Suzuki would be something like 100 runs, 90 RBI, 30 home run upside, 12 to 15 stolen bases, and something like, you know, which is going to be random, like a 287 average. So just something over 285, maybe the guy can even hit 300. But he is slated to bat second. He is absolutely mashing this spring. I believe they're probably going to have Ian Happ once he's healthy leading off. He's a good leadoff man there. They've got Bellinger and a nice group of guys there, Christopher Morel. And I really like the Cubs offense. They pop in as a top 10 offense this year. And Seiya Suzuki has yet to stay healthy. And this year, I mean, if it happens, I think you're looking at a guy that's going to return like second round fantasy value and be a top 10 outfielder. So what do you think of that?
I like it. Are you taking Suzuki over Yelich and we'll say Brian Reynolds?
I have been. It's a position where and you know, Reynolds has been somebody that I thought I was on. I thought I was a huge fan on when I started projections and everything. I loved Reynolds, but when I looked at my player shares on NFBC, I saw two shares. And you know, it's like the psyche, right, at work, where I never really took Reynolds and Yelich or those guys because I knew I could get Suzuki like a round or two later. There were just other guys in that next batch that I always had Suzuki valued higher, and anybody that saw it on VDP, you know, knew that was the case, where I stood on Seiya Suzuki. And so that's kind of always been the thing. So yeah, I do, whether they straight up beat both those guys out, not sure. I think he'll beat Reynolds out this year, with Yelich. I think it's highly likely as well. I don't know if Yelich is going to, you know, have another 100 plus run season. I don't know if he steals more than 15 bases. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty confident in that.
One more comp. Who's better end of season, Wyatt Langford or Seiya Suzuki?
I'll take Suzuki. Take the guy I know is going to play all year.
Love it. I mean, Suzuki getting healthy, or not even getting healthy, but getting more acclimated to America. I mean, he's got skills. I'm a big fan, so I like that call. My first one is Bo Bichette. I think he's going to win a batting title this year. I think he can bat 330. And I think we're looking at him at the back end of the first round next year. I listened to an interview on him, and he's talking about team accountability. Sounded like they were dogging it a little bit last year. And then, you know, all the stuff he was training on in off season to get his legs right. He said his legs felt heavy. With all that, he still hit over 300 last year. The counting stats weren't that good. But I think you can really look at a bounce back. And now he's batting third behind Vlad Guerrero, so you're looking at more RBIs in that case. And then he's doing Muay Thai. How can you not like a guy doing Muay Thai, or as our buddies would say, Mai Thai?
Muay Thai?
Muay Thai.
Muay Thai, yeah.
So, I mean, the hit tool's elite, and he was just a first-round pick, I think, just last year. I think he's going to be a monster this year.
I'm afraid that by the time we record this, I'm going to go look online and see what else I could draft, because this is a guy that I was in some draft. Weren't you and I in an OC together, was it? Maybe a month ago? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I saw you pop a Bo Bichette early, and you know, we haven't really talked about him, but he's a guy that has kind of escaped me in draft rooms. He's somebody that I've been targeting but not pushing up, and so it's always been a case where, okay, this is a perfect spot for me for Bo Bichette. And in every one of those scenarios, and specifically in main events over the weekend, someone else had that idea as well, and they would always pop Bo Bichette ahead of me. So that's you know, unfortunately a real shame. So have a couple of him, but they're mostly on like Gladiators or, you know, like the Raz Slam team. So just one OC so far where I have Bo Bichette, but I'm feeling you. Definitely a little bit of FOMO there, because it makes too much sense. I mean, these guys that are young, healthy, it's possible that he runs more than usual, and these guys that hit, you know, 300 easily, they don't grow on trees. They're so valuable. Batting average is one of the scarcest of the roto categories. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense, man. I'm definitely feeling the FOMO there. My number two is I'm gonna call that Garrett Whitlock finishes the season as an SP2. So basically, let's just call him this year's Eflin, this year's Zach Eflin. And on one end, it's, you know, it's a little cliche to do a this year's this or this year's that. But hey, I don't want to say I started it because, you know, there were this year's things probably before I did Yelich. I mean, not probably, they have been. It's not like I created the, you know, the platoon split. But, you know, I think it's still fun to do. And there is a comp here with Garrett Whitlock in the fact that, like Eflin, who finally was healthy, broke out last season, the common denominator there is a really low walk rate. And that's what you get with Garrett Whitlock, a guy that has a walk rate for his career under 5%. You're looking at, like, you know, BB9 numbers, even though he's been kind of tossed into the rotation to bullpen here and there for the last 3 years. It's always under 2. So again, you got to, you know, walk rates usually in that elite Eflin, Webb, you know, Eovaldi range from a few years ago. And finally, he's not going to get, you know, kind of shifted around. He's just going to get a chance to start in the rotation. I don't think that we'll see 150, 160 plus innings, but I think, I mean, he's good to go. He stretched out his last start. I think he fired 6 innings, bunch of strikeouts, again, just like 0 or 1 walks, which I think is going to be a big theme for him this year. And yeah, I love the guy. We'll see. I mean, he's had his pitch mix in the past, you know, some pitches have been better than others. His sinker, which is kind of his signature pitch, was not in its best sort of shape and velocity last season as it was in previous seasons, but he does look like he's back this year. So Garrett Whitlock and SP2, that's a bold prediction. I did want to go with Ronaldo Lopez here. I was considering him because they're kind of in similar categories, like relievers that are pretty talented, that could be pitchers. I mean, that could be good starters. And I think Ronaldo Lopez is set up for success in Atlanta. But when I draft him and when I click on him, it's like that little bit of in the back of the mind, like, you know, anything can happen. This maybe may not work out. Ronaldo's been great in the preseason, but again, you know, sometimes I worry about the durability, worry about the walk rates. And then I just think about those 2 seasons, like 4 or 5 years ago. I understand he's like a completely different pitcher, but 4 or 5 years ago, Ronaldo Lopez was literally like the worst starter in baseball. So there's, you know, a lot to get over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love both the arms and I love the Whitlock call. I actually, when I read the rumors about Kenley Jansen getting traded during spring training, I jumped on Whitlock as the next closer. I've just always been a big fan of that arm. They went the opposite direction, stretched him out, but he has looked really good in spring. And you know me, Vlad, I am a whip snob, and the best way to get a good whip is to not walk people. So great call on Whitlock. Do you like him or Eflin this year, if you had the heads up?
Oh, one-on-one? Oh, I mean, easily Eflin. I love okay. Eflin. Yeah.
You think he's going to be able to repeat?
Yes, I do. At least, okay. Yeah, that's where we have him, is within the ballpark of what he did last year.
Okay. Well, good call. I like it. My next one is CJ Abrams is going to steal 75 plus bags. I think he's going to throw in 15 homers in there too. I'm a big fan, and this is a very controversial player among many smart players. He either can't hit or he really can hit, and I'm under the feeling he can hit. When he got moved to leadoff last year, he stole 34 bases and 291 at bats. With 11 home runs. Now, I don't think the home run pace is going to stick, but the stolen bases, when he got on, he ran. And I don't think there's anything stopping him. I really think he was one of those top prospects that came up too early, was not ready. You know, that post-hype sleeper that we all talk about, the fantasy community just hates until they actually do it. And I think you're looking at a guy that could go 15, 75, bat 270 with, you know, 95-100 runs. So I'm definitely bullish on CJ Abrams this year.
Wow. And you have that one in your pocket, man. If I mean, I try to avoid kind of hype or other people's, you know, opinions, but I do respect a lot of people's opinions, and I feel like if I had heard some inkling of you thought that he could even you know, easily still over 55, I would probably have had more shares myself. I'd be like, hey, my pod partner thinks he's going to steal a bunch of base. I need to get some. So I went and checked my shares. I just have him on like 1DC because to me, he's been a pretty clear, not a full fade. For the right price, I would have taken him, but that right price was probably like a half round to a round later than his ADP. That's usually where VDP has had him. And so, yeah, it looks, let's see, might be missing the boat because when you said it, I could see it. It is something that makes a lot of sense. So, yeah. Oh, well, let me go see what's in the lobby right now.
One more OC, Vlad.
Yeah. All right. My next one is a Red Sox trio, the power trio there, the three guys with the highest ISO, they're going to combine for 100 home runs. That's Rafael Devers, that's Tristan Casas, and it's Tyler O'Neill. I think maybe 100 isn't even all that bold because what that means is Devers hits 40 for the first time, Casas hits 30, which VDP is already projecting 32, 33, and then for O'Neill to hit 30, which he's done before, and what that comes down to is, can that dude stay healthy? That's really always the problem. And he came back from his little injury, and I was scared. I looked at the box score, and I saw that he was subbed in for, but I guess that was by design. Probably we call that the Yordan. But in his first game back, he launched another bomb. I mean, I think he's ready to go. I think he's got a little chip on his shoulder, wants to prove it. And I really like this Boston offense. I think there are some players on there that maybe I don't have, like the Jaren Durans that I could end up being wrong on. But just the mix of these players is really nice. And then they're going to get Vaughn Grissom back. He's finally going to join the team as well. So don't mind the pitchers. Don't mind the hitters at all. But I think those three can get there. And Rafael Devers, man, I think he's really due for that massive season. He's just been such a consistent second round return type guy for the last few years, but I think maybe we see a little extra because of the guys around him.
Yeah, that is a really fun team, and you know, you might get there with O'Neill only hitting 20 homers because Casas and Devers can both hit over 40, just monsters. And then you know, you got Rafaela, you got Trevor Story, you got Grissom, you just got a fun team that really could produce a lot of runs. So it looks like you want to place a Red Sox season bet, Vlad, based on your predictions.
I should have been doing this earlier. I'm not in we're in California, so we don't have that easy access, but we'll see.
We're in Vegas?
Huh? No, I was busy, man. We were drafting. We were chatting with people. I didn't even think about it. Dang.
Yeah. The Red Sox can be fun. There's a lot of combustibility, but I think that team is going to be pretty good this year, so I like that call. My next one are the Detroit Tigers are going to be sneaky good and win the AL Central on the back of their pitching. I think I like every one of their pitchers, which I've never said about the Tigers. So we'll give a little shout out to Rob Geis and Matt Anderson about your Tigers, because I know I drafted a lot of them. But, you know, top to bottom, you have Kenta Maeda. You got, obviously, Tarik Skubal, who's now in the second round. Jack Flaherty has come out from the dead. He did the Undertaker gif. And then, you know, I have Reese Olson everywhere. I'm a big believer. I can't get Uncle Ted out of my head, him saying that he's this year's Kyle Bradish. So maybe I have a little influence. You have former first overall pick Casey Mize. And then you got arms coming up. You got Jackson Job. You got Sawyer Gibson Long. You got Matt Manning, who was just sent down. So it just keeps going. And their offense is actually kind of fun, too. So, yeah, I am calling the Tigers to win the Central. And no, I did not place a bet when I'm in Vegas. And I'm kicking myself right now.
The staff is looking really good. In fact, you might see a little surprise, not from me, but we have our MLB predictions. It's like our awards predictions for the season that we pulled the staff and some of our guest writers, and you might see a little surprise there. But yeah, I mean, for me still, it's the offense. That's just kind of the only concern for me. I think obviously guys like Riley Green, a healthy Riley Green with Torkelson and the mix of players there, I think they maybe take the next step up. So we'll see. You probably see a lot of low scoring games in their future. So anytime you see Detroit, go with the under. But that staff is great, and a couple of those guys are going to greatly out earn their ADPs, because for the most part, outside of Tariq Skubal, they're all pretty darn affordable. My next one is a big one. I've got Yandy Diaz and Ty France both as top 10 first basemen and probably top 40-ish hitters, like overall hitters. And this is without running, without stealing bases. This is something that Yandy and Ty France don't really do. It's one of the reasons why they have been underpriced in fantasy. People want to make sure they get their stolen bases, but I feel that people have been missing the boat big time on both of these guys. Yandy Diaz put up a return third round value last season, being a 250-ish ADP guy. He did it with an injury all season, so he was basically I don't know why, can never think of the injuries at the spot, but it was a growing issue, I think, something that he had been battling for most of the season, and the dude still hit 330 and was among the leaders in most like Statcast categories, scored 95 runs, hit 25 home runs, still played 600 plate appearances, nearly 140 games. So Yandy Diaz, so disrespectful in a main event. I got him at like 175 ADP. So the guy returns third round value, partially hurt. He's at the top of the lineup there, batting title guy, and he's not even good enough to draft in the 13th. It's madness. So I think Yandy Diaz, who, by the way, has got like 4 or 5 home runs this spring, launch angles up a little bit. The power's already there. I think he hits 30 bombs. I think he can do it pretty easily, considering he hit 22 last season and maybe he hasn't reached a ceiling there yet. 110 plus runs. And then Ty France right now, if you go just about anywhere, you'll note that Ty France is kind of in the bottom third of the lineup predicted. And that's because, hey, that's kind of where he's been hitting this spring. But I think Ty France is going to be the cleanup man for a majority of the season. And what that means is he's just running so hot that they're going to have to put him up, or maybe he walks at a higher clip than he has in the past. Usually like a 5-7% walk guy. He's been 12 in the spring. Again, small sample, doesn't really matter. Doesn't mean he's like a double digit walk guy now, but for him to, earn playing time over Mitch Garver, or like a lineup spot over Garver, I don't think will be that difficult. I think it works with the lineup there with the lefty Crawford. Then you get Julio Rodriguez, then you get Polanco, the switch hitter, and then France there. And France had been hitting there prior to, him getting cold last season. So, Ty France, man, I got him for like, I think 25 home runs, 100 RBI, and like a 290 average. And the price has gone up a little bit. He was a guy I could easily get in like the 23rd round in a 15 teamer or in a DC. And now you see him going like 250, 260. Yes, drive line helps. It's not the end all be all, but these are two super undervalued guys, in my opinion, Yandy Diaz and Ty France.
Yeah, I am completely on board with Yandy. That guy, I'm shocked that the price on draft season did not go up from him winning the batting title and doing what he did last year. I'm still getting him in the 10th, 11th round in 15 team leagues. It's criminal, in my opinion. Ty France is interesting because I have been on him the last couple of years, mainly because his hit tool and where he was batting in the lineup. He was batting second or third. Really concerned that he fell to seventh or eighth towards the end of last year with the struggles. And I've looked at a couple spring training lineups and he was still down there. They have a deeper lineup, getting Haniger back. And I'm pretty sure they're going to put him towards the middle as long as he's healthy. But that being said, France still has an elite bat to ball tool. And, what's the phrase? He went to driveline. There could be a big year coming from him.
All right. We got two more from you and then one from me, and we'll pop into some of our FOMOs.
So this is, I was trying to figure out who is going to beat Ronald Acuna this year. Who's going to dethrone him as the number one hitter. And I had two guys. The first one was Aaron Judge, but I'm a little worried about the toe. So I don't believe he's going to play enough games to do it on a per game basis. He can. So I am going to go with Bobby Witt outproduces Ronald Acuna. And outproducing Ronald Acuna, is that because Witt is just a monster? Is that because Acuna regresses? Is that a combination? I think it is just a combination, and Acuna regresses is still the number one player, so Witt's going to have to go nuts. But his last year actually was underperforming based on the metrics. His XBA was near 300. All of his metrics across the board were greatly improved, and you're talking about a 22, 23-year-old hitter that's just getting better. I really believe there's a 40-40, if not a possible 50-50 season in a Bobby Witt. And I really, I wouldn't place a bet that Ronald Acuna would not be the number one. But if somebody is to dethrone him, it'd be Bobby Witt. And, you know, that's why in the auctions, I just never understood the, you know, the $10 to $15 price difference between the two.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. For me, he's been the guy that I take when I'm at the two pick. And unfortunately, I've only had the two pick once this season, but that's the decision I made. And he was the guy for me there. So I like it a lot. I think projections might be underselling him. The potential for a 40-40 season, honestly, 40-50, I think is in the cards. And also for that to happen, for him to be the number one guy, all it takes is for Acuna to spend a little bit of time on the IL. And after the absolute perfect season, you know, don't wish anything upon anyone, but to think that everything's just going to go as swimmingly as it did for Acuna last year, I think would be a little foolhardy. Of course, it's possible. For all we know, he is even better this season than last, so we'll see. My next one is that I believe, and I have been drafting as such, and I think most people identify this within VDP, is that the Marlins are going to be a fantasy goldmine. And I'm talking all the way down the board from the expensive guys, from a Jazz Chisholm who has not been moved even in the last couple of weeks. I'm sure there are some drafts where he's gone in the third. I had to overpay for him in my auction personally, with some people driving the price up on me. But for the most part, like, you know, leagues that I've seen him in the last week or so go fourth round, fifth round, and 15 teamers. I was trying to figure out like what is the Jazz hate, and especially after he hit the three home runs. And then I went and looked, and on Roster Resource, they've got him with the you know, the kind of the highlighted position there with a L, with highlighting showing that he's in a platoon. So that is Jason R.R. Martinez projecting him in a platoon, and I like to see that. Not that I think that's going to happen, but if I'm seeing that, I think that's scaring people off a little bit. I mean, it should a little bit, right? He still strikes out at a high clip. He did struggle against lefties the last few years. I think anything's possible. But I mean, I see him as an everyday guy. But as far as the fantasy goldmine part, it's everything from late round Brian De La Cruz and Jesus Sanchez. Josh Bell, I think finally, a guy I've never drafted, I think finally has a decent season, especially if he's going to hit there near the top of the lineup. Arias, Jake Berger, like just great deals on all these players, and they give you different things. Arias is the extreme batting average guy, batting title guy. Berger, the massive power. He could lead the league in home runs for all we know. It's a nice mix there. And I mean, even down to Christian Bethencourt, like people forgot about him. That's a good like 30th round target, I think, for a catcher. He's really won out that job over Nick Fortes. So they'll split it, but I think he'll get more of it, and he can even steal a few bases. So you got all these guys, and then you got like an elite, on paper at least, like fantasy pitching staff. And Tanner Scott's pretty good. The bullpen's good. Maybe Sixto pops in and does something, says, hello. Hello, I'm fantasy relevant too. So yeah, all those guys, man, I really, it's a weird team to like. The ballpark isn't great. I'm not saying they're the 2021 Toronto Blue Jays that just, you know, massively popped off for all that value, but just for where they go and for expectations, I think the Marlins are just a great fantasy goldmine.
You meant future closer Sixto Sanchez?
It's possible.
Yeah, they have a lot of unique skills. They're kind of like all isolated skills. Jazz with the speed, Berger with the power, Arias with the bat to ball, but they're a fun team. So yeah, with that staff, it could have some fun, and you really could get some stats out of that offense if things break right. You have a lot of young guys that are stepping up. So yeah, Brian De La Cruz, Jesus Sanchez, that outfield definitely could have some fun there. So good call. My last one is Joe Ryan will be a Cy Young finalist this year. I have gotten a lot of him, and I hope to get hope he does what I think he's doing. But last year, he had a growing injury that really derailed him in the second half. He tried to pitch through it, but his metrics across the board, 24.3% K minus walk, almost 11 Ks per nine. His ball percentage was 31.1%, which is just elite. His O swing was good. His Z contact was under 80%. The only thing lacking was the CSW. So he wasn't getting a lot of called strikes because he was getting swinging strikes. It seems like he's added even another pitch in spring training too. So if he can really keep that going and limit the home runs, he is going to be... he's going to be Pablo Lopez good, if not better. So that is my last bold call for the season.
And that's why I wasn't drafting Pablo Lopez. And it's because, to me, the difference between him and Joe Ryan, and where I do see a lot of similarities, it was too vast. And of course, that difference had been, I guess the gap had been closed on it a little bit over the last month or so, because Joe Ryan was... you couldn't even get him like past the fourth round in main events. He was going like in the 60s, along with Bobby Miller, Eflin, Grayson, those guys. But there was a time where he was going in the 80s, 90s, and that gap between him and Pablo Lopez made no sense. I just found my tweet from mid-January where I was talking about the medium probability event that Joe Ryan out-earns Pablo Lopez straight up in 5x5 roto value, and just looking at their kind of comparison. You know, the durability slightly lean for Pablo, I believe. Controls about even. Command and strikeouts is about even. Wins is a negligible thing, not anything you can, really go with. Velo, Pablo slightly, not enough to make a difference. Pitch mix, Pablo slightly. But beyond that, there really isn't much of a difference. And I had just not been able to draft Pablo Lopez, and maybe just something in my head about him getting kind of so much love in the industry, and him being, close to the industry. I think those things kind of overhype the price. And not to say he can't or won't be a top five guy. I just could never justify it over guys that were going a couple of rounds later. So I like that call very, very much. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you got to try Underdog Fantasy. It's the easiest place to play fantasy sports. So in their Pick'em game, Underdog's Pick'em game, all you got to do is pick your favorite baseball player and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. You pick 2 to 5 players, you get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up to the promo code with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some more bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's underdogfantasy.com on Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN. Get your first deposit doubled up to $100. You must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and 21 and older in Massachusetts and Arizona. And that's where, where states where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit.com. ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, you call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, you call 1-800-889-9789. FOMO players. Let's run through it real quick. A few guys that we do not have enough shares of. I just looked through all my player shares, and there's one guy. It's so funny. We put together this outline, and when I mentioned, I said, hey, you want to talk about some FOMO players? We were in this Google Doc at the same time, and it's like, jinx, our first guy that we had listed was the same guy. Who's that guy?
That would be stud Royce Lewis that I just could not draft. I could not pull the trigger. I actually put a lot of fab on him last year and he got hurt, but he came back and went nuts. I think he hit like 9,000 grand slams the last month of the season. But I couldn't do it in the fourth round. Just the injury risk, I could not get out of my head.
Yeah, I thought I had some, like maybe on a DC somewhere. I've tried. I've literally waited for him, and I was like, I'm going to get Royce Lewis in this one, and I just couldn't do it. I even considered him on the this year's Yelich. I mean, there was just a period of time where I was waiting for like that overwhelming feeling to take over me and be like, yeah, this is my guy. But with just the history of lower leg issues, I just couldn't do it. But I think the Minnesota Twins are an elite offense. I think they are powered by him. He's kind of the star there. You know, forget Buxton and Correa and all these other guys. Yeah, there are a lot of good players there, but he's going to be the one that drives them. He's the one that has honestly huge potential to be the MVP of the league. I probably would throw a futures bet if I can get one in beforehand. Maybe that's how I will hedge it, is let me find a way to place a futures bet on Royce Lewis, because I do think that he could be an MVP this season. Really just needs to stay healthy all year. I think that's really the case. So I'm with you there. No shares. I feel like I'm going to get burned by it. Again, the price wasn't all that high, so there's not like all that much profit to make. I think the more dangerous ones are where, you know, you miss out on a bunch of the guys that go like after round 20 and they return top 50 overall value. Like, you know, the last year's, you know, Lane Thomas, Haesung Kim, Spencer Steers, like you kind of want to get more of those guys. So it won't hurt as much, but I know how you feel.
Yeah. I could not take him over Machado. So there was no Royce Lewis in my life. My next FOMO was Trevor Story. I think we're looking at a season that he might go 2020. And again, we were talking about that Red Sox offense. He just came out and said he wanted to play 150, 155 games. He has not been healthy up until late last year. I'm really starting to have some FOMO, and there were some really smart guys in Vegas drafting him. So I think I might have missed the boat on that. So I'm a little concerned.
I couldn't do it most of the preseason, and most of it had to just do with the fact that I couldn't take on what I perceived was a very low batting average and risk. But yeah, there's a lot of bounce back here. He's kind of middle of that lineup. He's looking good in spring. He's really a nice piece that weaves in the rest of those guys that we talked about earlier. And so, yeah, I mean, this is a guy that, you know, used to go 30-20 without issue. So yeah, I could see it. I believe I got him on one of my latest teams, a main event or something. And yeah, so I'm in on that. Sal Frelick is my guy. Another one of my FOMO guy. And this isn't someone I don't have shares of. I do have six, but I could not get him on any main event teams. Or I just kind of realized it after one of my mains. I'm like, wait, I kind of missed the boat on this. Like I really wanted, I should have just popped him a round or two earlier and just to make sure I got him. And I think other people had the same idea. If he gets other position eligibility, that's nice. That's not what I really care about. What I feel though is that Sal Frelick is a dude that can hit 300, will be a leadoff guy, at least against lefties. Now my brain hurts.
I think he's left-handed.
Yeah. He'll hit one way against guys.
Hey, great podcasting, right, Vlad?
Yeah. This is why I'm a professional. This is why I get these, you know.
This is why we don't do morning podcasts.
And why I get partners like you. Yeah. Yes, a righty. He is left-handed. He's a lefty.
Yeah.
Hitting righties. But anyway, Sal Frelick is one of those guys that's underprojected in the stolen bases everywhere. So 20 plus stolen bases, could get some of that eligibility in the middle or the corners, but most likely due to recent injuries, probably going to stick in the outfield.
Yeah. First round pick, they want to play him. Obviously that's why they were playing him at third base in spring. So he definitely is a guy. I don't have any shares and I might be regrettable. My next guy is O'Neill Cruz. I thought he'd actually move up the board even higher. I've continually been 2 to 3 picks away from picking him. By the time I'm ready to pick him, put him in my queue, he goes right in front of me. And you know, there's a non-zero chance that he's better than Ellie De La Cruz. So which Cruz is better? The guy has just been a monster in spring, 117, 118 mile an hour ball speed, max exit velocity. He hits it hard. I just, I couldn't get away from that 220 to 230 batting average. Same reason I don't have Ellie. Now, if he goes and hits 250, 260, you're looking at 30 homers, 20 steals, you know, 80 and 80. That's a pretty good baseball player. I have no shares, and I wish I had at least one to kind of root for.
I like the O'Neill Cruz call. I mean, that's the ultimate helium. He's the guy that has been taken off. I'm going in the third round of main events. Again, a lot to like there with the Pittsburgh Pirates. My guy is also a Pittsburgh Pirate here, and that's Henry Davis. So right around the time before he started really launching off, so there was a little period of time where I was thinking of reconstructing what a this year's Yelich would be, and to go a little deeper down the player pool and maybe say it's, you know, somebody going past 200 that would be like a top 40 guy. And it's because I wanted to construct my article around Henry Davis. I don't know if we'll call him Hank this season. Maybe he doesn't like that, but Henry Davis just has the it factor. I remember being excited about him getting called up last season, and he came out with a bang. And then he cooled off, of course, but he was hurt. He was a little injured there. So the rest of his season before he got demoted was not ideal, but Henry Davis just, he's got that kind of, you know, the pedigree, first of all, is a first overall pick. And when you just see him on the field and him hitting, just looks like the guy, just the guy that's been crushing it through his entire, you know, baseball life. Got that kind of, you know, short, stocky frame and just, you know, good eye. He's great. And unfortunately, everybody, he kind of got hot at the wrong time and the price soared. It came to a point where, you know, if this guy is starting to go, 10th round, it becomes a little bit more dangerous. But I do think he easily clears the 10 round barrier, you know, top 150 overall. And I think, you know, adding catcher eligibility for him would be huge. Could steal a few bases possibly. But home runs, you know, 25 home runs, I think are definitely on board. And I see him eventually as the number four hitter there. I see him mixing in, behind Reynolds, Cruz, Hayes. So, yeah, I mean, lots of like in Henry Davis.
Yeah. Do you like him because he's getting the catcher eligibility, or would you play him in the outfield?
I would play him in the outfield. I would, you know, in a box with a fox, with socks, the whole nine.
Well done, Vlad. Henry Davis, I love him. We'll see how long it takes him to get catcher eligibility. That's my only holdup, because I think him as a catcher is even more valuable. Does he play 2 days a week? Does he play 5 days a week at catcher? How long does it take him to get those 10 games? But once he does, he should be kind of up, you know, the Cal Raleigh production, if not higher, in the catchers. So that's a valuable, valuable player. So I wish I had more, and I know you do too. My last FOMO player is actually a Dodger, Tyler Glasnow. I have him projected for 130 innings, which would still make him my SP 6 or 7. I just haven't been in a position to draft him. So I think if he gets to 130 innings, you could get 200 strikeouts. He's that good. So not much to say other than he's an elite arm with a major health issue. Not issue, we'll call it concern. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had a share, and maybe I'll get one tonight, but it's a lot of money we're putting on the line for a guy that could only throw 100 innings.
I feel you there. Joe Musgrove is my last FOMO player, a guy that I've been really big on, a guy that has been among the best ratio guys, ERA whip over the last few years, pitches in a great pitcher's park. I remember somebody randomly tweeting at me when I said something about Musgrove. This is a random dude. Was like, oh, but Musgrove's not even that good. I'm like, bro, have you seen the numbers? Look at the numbers. Joe Musgrove legit is one of the best pitchers here in baseball over the last few seasons, at least from a fantasy perspective, in terms of value and where he goes and everything. It really does line up for him. And the fact that he got torched in that first spring game, I think really helped drop his price a little bit. So I do like Joe Musgrove very much. Really quickly touching on some of our like minor FOMO. This isn't like, you know, guys that we have to have. Maybe there's some of the more expensive ones. But my really quick list is, I went back and I looked, and how is, I love Mitch Garver so much this season, and how did I only up with one share? I have no idea. Same thing, only one share of Seager, only one share of Ellie, though. It's not like massive FOMO. I when I see him hitting 210 at some point, I feel like I won't feel that FOMO. And then Cabrian Hayes, Riley Green are a couple of guys that I have minor FOMO on. And then this one kind of stings because I don't want to try to claim I predict the future, and especially with the injury, you got to be careful. I'm not going on Twitter going like, oh, I told you guys to get Ginkle and to fade Seawald. But I mean, that is kind of what I did. Like, you know, I avoided Seawald like the plague, had him like 40 spots below ADP in my ranking. No, I did not know he was hurt. Yes, that's kind of a random lucky coincidence. No, I won't go on Twitter and beat my chest about it. But I did pick up Ginkle before the night before the injury happened on the last day, just as my in the 29th, because I looked at the schedule. I'm like, well, I need a closer here. They got four games against Colorado. Maybe he sneaks in a win or something, and he's not a bad safe spec. And then the next day the injury happens. And now I'm like, I look back, I'm like, man, I only got four Ginkles. I should have got more. He was my guy that was going to Wally Pip Seawald. And so I don't know, maybe he sticks with it for the whole season, or maybe Seawald comes back and, you know, gives me the old roto gut punch.
I got a chuckle out of four shares is FOMO. it's a good draft in the 30th round. You know, you put your money where your mouth is. So great call on that. And I hope it works out for you. My minor FOMO guys, Vlad Jr. I feel like I might be the bat flip crazy, you know, every time he hits a homer, you know, the walk of shame this year. A lot of really smart people on Cabrian Hayes and Riley Green. Two guys I have been on in the past. I have not been buying them this year, so I don't have enough of them. I wish I had more Jake Berger, because I love him as a player. And then Manny Machado, I have a couple shares. I wish I had more. I think he's a second round player going in the fourth round, sometimes in the fifth, and he's just mispriced. So that was my minor FOMO guys.
All right, real quick on the fades as we close out the show here. For me, it was pretty much the closers in that range, like after Iglesias, and at a time it was before Evan Phillips and Fairbanks, and it was the group of Camilo Doval, Seawald, Romano, and then also Kenley Jansen, even though he was going quite a bit later. Those were guys that I was not interested in, and it was just a market thing. It was the fact that they were closers I liked better, who I guess technically had more question marks that were going a round or two later. And we cover that in the positional tiers article. So it was those guys, Spencer Steer, just some weird reason. And I'm sorry, I offend people. There are a lot of really smart people that like Spencer Steer. And so obviously this is not anything personal. It's just some kind of weird thing I have with the fact that he's not an elite hitter. And I feel that the positional eligibility and the fact he plays for Cincinnati kind of overvalues his price. So I just have been out and on him on that. Same thing with Evan Carter, just because, I don't know, just like a not amazing feeling about the Rangers overall, the fact that he struggled against lefties, the fact that maybe he is overpriced because of the playoffs last season. So just little things like that. And then the catchers there in the around 140-ish, 130, 140-ish. So like the Cal Raleigh, Sal Perez guys, the guys that they don't run, they hit a lot of home runs, but they can hurt you in average. You know, basically even Francisco Alvarez and Sean Murphy were guys that I wasn't really going in that range. But ironically, I was infatuated with Logan Ohapi. So never enough Ohapi shares.
Good call on Evan Carter. I missed calling him out, but a guy can't hit lefties. I don't understand the draft costs 100%. A lot of prospect pedigree, but Wyatt Langford's obviously the new kid in town there. My fades, Jose Altuve. Age is undefeated and the metrics are declining. I think going where in the third, fourth round, it's going to be, I think people are going to be disappointed what they get. New San Francisco Giant, Blake Snell, coming off a Cy Young season, going to a new team, starting off late in spring training. I just don't see that repeating. You're going to get a lot of strikeouts, but I think you're looking at closer to a 1.25, 1.3 whip. And if the left on base stuff regresses to the mean, you could have closer to a 4 ERA. Bryson Stott, him 30 steals, but he seems to be going 2-3 rounds too high. JT Realmuto now batting 6th or 7th in that lineup. I just don't like the draft costs on him. And then lastly, but not least, Justin Verlander. I think the skills are about gone, and then the health is gone. So people are stashing him to come back. I actually might be disappointed when he does come back to pitch. And then if I could, I'd fade every closer because it's just a disaster. So, but you have to get at least two to compete. So you got to navigate through that.
Yeah, we'll be looking at end of April, and it's the teams that punted it all together and have, like, you know, Trevor McGill with Griffin Jacks and, you know, Kevin Ginkle, and those are the ones, while every other closer is there on the shelf. Yeah, it's baseball. It's baseball, baby. It's here. It's starting. It's unpredictable. It's beautiful. And opening day is right around the corner. We are ready for it. We are ready to draft. You're ready for live scoring for us to look at it incessantly. And we're ready to start the process of winning some leagues. So thank you again for listening to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review. For my co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.